we had millions of streams on NorthCAC across multiple platforms, played at all kinds of stadiums. But when you're making a third of a penny per stream, right, it's very difficult to really feel successful, even though you're super popular.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I saw somebody else say that, like, one of my worst nightmares is being famous and broke, right? Like, I think if you're famous and having all that attention on you, but you can't feed yourself or take care of your family, that's the worst, bro. Yes. Like, that to me is the... And there's a lot of artists right now, because of the way that the streaming system is structured, that are mad famous and mad broke, yeah. Right? And so I just think it's a really lopsided structure. Spotify is making billions of dollars, right? Apple Music, billions of dollars. And we believe that creators deserve better. But artists always seem to be the ones at the bottom end of the pay scale.
The Highest Point Podcast.
More than a pod, it's a lifestyle.
Yo, welcome to the Highest Point Podcast. This is a podcast for everyone, no matter where you're from, no matter what you've been through. You know you deserve the best and willing to put in the work for progress to reach the highest point. Now, speaking about reaching the highest point, we have a very, very special guest in the building. I'm talking about a Durham legend. You know, he's one of the best rap artists out. Yes, we're probably from North Carolina, but his talent has proven to be one of the best in the nation. You know what I'm saying? He's done amazing things working with icons such as Dame Dash. We've seen him share stages with incredible artists. He's just doing great things. So I want to welcome Mr. Joshua Gunn in the building, a.k.a. Jay Gunn. What's happening with you, man?
What's goody, bro? It's good to see you, man. Happy to be on here today, bro.
Yeah, man. Definitely, definitely happy to see you and have you on as well, man. It's an honor and want to salute everything that you're doing. You know, I just love the movement.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing we like to focus in on this show is like the journey. We want to give insight to like how you got to the mental space to create such an inspiring project. So I want to start off by asking you, like, okay, we know you're from, you know, Durham, North Carolina. Can you also tell us some insight on your family dynamics growing up?
Yeah, man. So I'm from Durham, born and raised in Durham. I always say I'm a fourth generation Durhamite. So my pops is from Durham. My grandfather's from Durham. My great grandfather moved to Durham when he was really young. So Durham is a big part of who I am. You know what I'm saying? The history of Durham, the black economic history has always been inspiring to me.
Right.
And when you have a father and grandfather who care about the city, you naturally get connected to the city in that way. My mom is from Germany. So my pops did 20 years in the Air Force, like so many black men in that particular period of time. He served in Vietnam, eventually was stationed in Germany where he met my mother.
Yeah.
And I was the first of their children to be born back in his hometown of Durham. So, yeah, I mean, you know, growing up in Durham is interesting, man. It's just like any other city. I know you in Greensboro. So, Durham and Greensboro, very similar, right? There's a HBCU there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, you know, Duke University is also in Durham. You know, there's a lot of economic prosperity in Durham, but also a lot of poverty, right? And so I kind of grew up right directly in the middle of both, you know, so had a really diverse set of experiences that I think you hear in my music, you know what I mean? Durham also has a rich political activist history and tradition. You hear that in my music, you know what I mean? Durham also... always feels like it's a bigger city than it is, or believes that we're a bigger city than we are. And my music really embodies that spirit of like, you know, just because I'm from a smaller place doesn't mean that I can't accomplish great things. And I think the city gave me that kind of aspirational mentality too. So it's hard to talk about my upbringing without talking about hip hop, because I started making music at 7 years old. You know what I mean? There were some, you know, challenges in my household. My father battled addiction his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And that as a child, that translates into your experiences, right? So hip hop was an outlet for me, dealing with some really tough times. I had an older brother who, died via suicide, when I was 7 years old too. So these are all kind of pivotal moments that my young brain was really trying to make sense of, and hip hop was the outlet for me. It really saved my life in a lot of different ways, which I'm happy to talk about.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like experiencing those type of traumas, you know, witnessing, you know, things with your pops, you know, a lot of us have seen family members be, you know, addicted to drugs, but you know, it's sometimes it's not right there in the household. You're looking at an aunt or uncle or something like that. So when you get in that first person point of view, it, you know, it can have a different type of contact and also, you know, on you. Now just thinking about those, you know, type of things and, you know, I understand you had a sibling, you know, pass away as well. You know, I want to talk about, you know, because how much you reference Bull City in your music. You know, what are some of the core elements of the city that you're proud of and how did it help shape you to be the man you are today?
Yeah, man. Bull City is like, as I mentioned, man, it's the heart and soul of who I am. You know what I mean? It is, in many ways, I think my music embodies those characteristics, right? It's Black excellence. It's a pride and passion for yourself. It's a grit and determination. You know, people outside of Durham call it Dirty Durham. And when I was a kid, I didn't like that, but we kind of embraced that too because, you know, we come from that dirt, that mud, that grind, that kind of industrial, do-it-yourself, entrepreneurial spirit. You know, and I mentioned the Black excellence because throughout my entire childhood, we had a Black mayor. I was able to see Black judges, Black attorneys. You know, so in addition to kind of the images of, you know, Black dope boys and Black gangsterism that also is in the city heavy, you know what I mean? Durham has a great balance of what I describe as the full spectrum of Blackness. And so that's just a great place to grow up in. If you're in tune to it, if you tap in and realize what that is. So, you know, I saw Killer Mike talk about Atlanta having that, right?
Yeah.
And I think what people fail to appreciate is a lot of cities in North Carolina also have that, right? When you have a rich HBCU tradition like Greensboro does with A&T, my alma mater, and Durham does with North Carolina Central, you naturally have people that inspire you doing positive things that look like you. And that was big for me. And the older I get, the more I really appreciate that. So I think that's why I'm so proud of the Bull City, man. You know, we are often overlooked, often disrespected, but we keep on shining, man. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And that's what I do as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Those things kind of, you know, people say those type of things, you say like Dirty Durham and things like that, but it can actually be the reverse of what they're trying to do. It'll make you have more pride in where you're from. Like, you know, I'm going to show you what this place can produce. You know what I'm saying?
That's facts. That's facts. It puts a chip on your shoulder and a battery in your back, bro.
Facts.
That's what drives me, man. My city really does drive me. And, you ain't got to listen to, you can probably listen to two songs and see how much I love my city. You know what
for
I mean?
For sure. Yeah. I hear the Bull City a lot in your music and I love it, man. Yeah. And, you know, I can tell you have a pride in like where you're from. And also I saw that you was part of this kind of like a new North CAC anthem as well, you know, by G. Amazawa. And
G. Amazawa.
Yeah. How did that come about? Because, you know, you definitely killed your verse. So I want to give you some props on that.
Hey, thank you, man. Yeah, that song really, you never know when you make a record what the impact of it is going to be. You know what I mean? And so G and I don't want to say this in a weird way, but I think we knew each other mutually from the hip hop scene. G is a little younger than me, so kind of looked up to me as, you know, kind of the guy from the city when he was growing up, and which makes me sound old, I guess. But at the same time, you know, there was always a mutual respect. I recorded at a place called Bull City Sound Studio, and the engineer there was like, bro, you got to hear this guy, G. Yamazawa. And I knew the name because he had really started off as a poet in this kind of spoken word poetry movement. He won a couple poetry festivals. Like, G is an incredible talent, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But hip hop was his chosen path to spit his poetry. And he's like, man, G is making some crazy music. You got to hear it. He played me a couple records. And he was like, man, would you consider doing a song with him? And I'm, you know, I liked what he was doing. I'm like, absolutely. So he just sent me the beat for North CAC and the hook, right? So he already had the hook on it, I think. I think the hook was already on it. But either way, I went crazy for the beat and dropped the 16. We shot the video. I was actually getting ready to go on tour in Korea. Like, that day was my flight. And I almost missed the video shoot because, you know, like, again, I'm doing a lot of things at this particular time. I just got back from a European tour. I'm about to go to Asia. I'm thinking about all the stuff I got going on. And here's the, you know, he's like, do this video for a feature you did. And thank God I was able to do it because it became one of the biggest records ever out of North Carolina, particularly in terms of radio play. Right. For the first time, a local song really got that radio push because people really felt it was an anthem. Carolina Panthers played it. Carolina Tar Heels played it. Duke played it. Charlotte Hornets still play it, right? It's become very much an anthem for the state. If you listen to the verses, we mostly just talking about Durham. All three of the rappers on there are from Durham, the producers from Durham. But I think everybody in North Carolina could resonate with that, cornbread fed, that feeling, that energy. So I'm glad I did the verse. I'm glad G liked it. I'm glad he pushed it the way he did. And we perform it, bro. We still perform it every year, at least a couple of times. And the crowd knows every word. The energy of it is just incredible. So it's just one of those special records. And I don't think any of us expected it to go that far.
Wow. Well, it definitely did. It was one I was rocking with. You know, I heard it in those stadiums before as well. I'm like, yo, this is fire. Yeah. So I love that representation.
Such a dope beat. Shout out to Armie Hammer, the guy who produced it, man. He's incredible. So, you know, man, in this music thing, you never know what you create is going to do. Right. And sometimes you think you got a big record and it doesn't go anywhere. Right. Sometimes you think it's just a fun song for you and your friends and it becomes, you know, Carolina Panthers with 50,000 singing along. You know what I'm saying? So
facts.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, man, it's fire. And, you know, speaking of some other like peers, like people is really doing some dope things out of Carolina. I was listening to a podcast and I saw how Little Brother just gave mad salute to you. They were just talking about this younger kid that was like 16 years old chopping grown people heads off.
And then it was this cat named Jay Gunn, who at the time was 16 and he was like a child prodigy. Like this nigga was embarrassing grown men. Like it was ugly, you know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, because he had the kid thing working for him, so it's like he's young, but it wasn't just that.
Go.
He could go. It was like, oh my God. And so the first battle that we did, it was me and my homie Omotadi. We made it to the finals. I lost to Omotadi, and then O made it to the finals, and he lost to Jay Gunn.
So, you know, when they reference you like that, you know, I was listening to Fonte and Big Pooh. How important is it to you to get respect like this from your peers, and does it fuel you, or does it, you know what I'm saying, just makes you more so confirmed in your contribution to the game?
Yeah, man. Shout out to Tay and Pooh, man. Shout out to Little Brother, living legends in this hip hop thing, not only North Carolina, but in general, worldwide legends. It was so dope to see them shout me out, bro. Let me tell you two things. So first, I was 14 at that battle, not 16, because maybe I was turning 14 or 15, but I remember my dad dropped me off. I couldn't drive yet, right? My pops dropped me off. It was at the Durham Armory downtown. And so that's how young I was, right? Couldn't drive yet, and I was solo, right? And so what's interesting about my battle rap history is I've been in some really tough situations as a little kid with no entourage, you know what I mean? Because you don't have, as a teenager who can't drive a car, you ain't really going to be able to bring your friends with you. You know what I mean? And they parents probably not going to let them come to that environment by themselves. But my pops fortunately believed in me enough to drop me off in some tough environment. So that story was dope that Fonte referenced it, and here's why. When we were battling, bro, we kind of felt like we hated each other. Mm. Like we really did. Like you see, it's different in the game now, right? These guys, battle rap today, they get on stage and say some really horrible things about each other, right? And then they dap up and hug and they're probably cool afterwards.
Yeah.
In the triangle scene at that time, because nobody had really got on, right? There was nobody that we could look to and say they making some money off this hip hop thing, or they famous off this hip hop thing. I mean, we had a few people who did some dope stuff, but nobody was really on.
Right.
And so we were hungry, we were starving. And anybody that was in our way was an adversary to us, right? And so Tay and I, that battle became legendary in the North Carolina scene, right? And there are a million different stories about people's perception of how that thing played out. Mm. You know, it's kind of like a tall tale, right? Like, you know, a lot of things that didn't happen, people remember them happening, you know what I'm saying? but my point of that is, I always admired Tay as an artist, right? Mm. And that was the first battle I ever lost, by the way, was the battle against Tay. Mm. We went multiple rounds because the judges couldn't decide who the winner was, right? And he ended up sneaking me with this line. I'm going to tell you how crafty he was. So at the time, Terminator X from Public Enemy was managing me, right? So by age 14, 15, I'm already creating music, trying to do my thing. And he asked me, what's Terminator X doing in North Carolina, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh man, he came down here to start an ostrich farm, which is a true story, right? So he was, you know, people may not know, but ostriches are very popular, like, meat overseas, right? In Australia in particular, ostrich eggs have a lot of uses. Anyway, there's a lot of money in raising ostriches, and he had a farm here in North Carolina at the time. So I just said that to Tay leading up to the battle. And we going round for round. Nobody really blowing that knockout blow. And I remember he said something, something, something preposterous. Why don't you go back to Terminator X and them fucking ostriches? And the crowd just lost it. And I'm like, damn, I gave this man the fucking bullet to shoot me with, right? So I'll never forget that. And it's cool that he didn't forget it. But anyway, the point of that is, as somebody who admired him and watched him do what he was doing and little brother getting on, I didn't know if Tay really fuck with me, right? I'm like, man, this guy, you know, we had this rivalry, and for him to come full circle and give me love and props and pull the same way to show love and props on what we were doing at such a young age, it feels really good, you know what I mean? Because I got so much respect for them. Over the years, Tay and I have become cool. He's helped me with a lot of things, mm-hmm. Helped me get some attorneys for some deals I was doing, and just been kind of a sounding board for ideas creatively. What people don't know about Tay is, in addition to rapping, he's got the Questlove podcast that he's hosting. He does voiceovers. He did some writing for TV, scripted, like commercials. Like, he's an entertainment genius. You know what I'm saying? And a great writer and speaker and all of that. So it's been great to see us all grow and evolve. And to know that rivals can become friends, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because it was vicious back then, man. Shout out to cats like Josie Moe, Kazi. We really low-key hated each other for a little while, bro, because we were so hungry. But, you know, from that discontent, you develop respect when you see people really dope at their craft.
Right, right. You're not going to really hate nobody. It's not like a worthy adversary. You know what I'm saying?
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. And, you know, for me, being so much younger than them at the time, it felt really dope to be amongst them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, at one point, bro, I didn't really care about hip hop artists that were outside of my state. Mm-hmm. My heroes were right there in front of me. You know what I mean? So, like, getting the respect of a Josie Moe or a Fonte or a Kazi, that meant more to me than a Jay-Z co-sign at the time, right? It was everything in our little small world, because we had our own thing going on, and that was really cool.
Yeah, man. Amazing talent out of Carolina. Like, so amazing. Yeah. So, and I also see you doing some real dope things within the Black Network. Now, I wanted to, you know, get some insight on how that connection came about, and can you tell us about, you know, why people should tune into that platform?
Man, In the Black is the future. Right. In the Black is a Black owned streaming platform, owned, created, conceptualized by Greensboro's own James DuBose.
Exactly.
Right. DuBose is my brother, my partner in business, somebody who's believed in me from day one. And I was actually watching a talk the other day, and they said that the most valuable thing that you can give someone else is believing in them. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I met James through a couple of guys that, big up to my man Terry and Chill. So Terry is also Greensboro legend. Terry Bracken, everyone knows Terry if you ask around the city, and his good friend Chill. My best friend from childhood is Terry's nephew. He gave Terry my music. Terry called me immediately like, man, you cold, we got to do something with you. And this was in a period of time where I was kind of stuck, right? Kind of stuck in terms of, like, okay, I'm not battle rapping no more. I'm not a kid no more, right? I want to make music. I'm making something that I think is dope, but very different from the underground stuff I was doing before. And so, man, some of the people that followed me during that kind of third day battle rap period weren't really resonating with what I was doing as a college kid. You know what I'm saying? You know this, bro, but when you grow up, you go to college, you have different experiences. I was all about partying and girls and, like, you know, doing the college things, and I was dressing different and doing different things. So some of the fan base that knew me in the hoodie and the battle raps, I don't know, they weren't really sure about what was next for me, right? And so I figured it out. My partner Rashad Lassen and I, we got some momentum. We were in XXL, we were in The Source, we were performing all over the country. But I wanted a record deal, right? Like, you know, when we were coming up, a record deal was everything, right? I wish I knew then what I know now about being independent, but I just wanted a deal. So Terry took my music, sent my music to Chill and DuBose have like a tight relationship. He sent it out to DuBose. DuBose immediately loved the music, right? And at that time, he was heavy into the film and entertainment industry, right? He was doing the Keisha Cole show, the Tiny and Toya show, Michael Vick show, Hell Date. Yeah. He was the black TV mogul, right? He was producing everything for BET and beyond that was successful. And he was passionate about music. He had launched his music label with MC Light as the VP of that label. Shout out to Light. So he calls me. He's like, bro, I want to sign you. I think we can do some great things together. This was about 10 years ago, just for time context. Light comes to Greensboro, meets me at the, what's that? Grandview Resort, you know, out there, like almost a High Point.
Yeah.
And so we meet at that hotel and Light and I just chop it up and she offers me a deal, right? She's like, we want to sign you. We want to take you to LA. And things started to happen really fast. We started work on an album while I was in LA. We started to do a lot of great footage, video, and build momentum for the release. And then a lot of different things happened. James went through some personal transitions. The company went through some transitions and things just didn't work out the way we wanted them to work out. And James and I lost touch for a couple of years after that, right? I continued on and kept pushing the music, went the independent route, and we had a great run, never stopped creating. And he and I kept in touch periodically, but not the way that we were working together at that time. And since then, bro, we have tried a couple different ventures together. We worked on some things when he was at Fox Soul. We continued to push, but this moment, it's just God is incredible, man, because, you know, I have been ramping back up to make good music again. James started his own company at Ender Black Network. He's having a lot of success. They're only 5 months in at Ender Black, by the way, and the things they are doing over there, it's going to change the entire world for us, man. So us being black people. But anyway, he's like, bro, I want to do Ender Black music. We start working on the album. He brings in Dr. Salisha, who is Selena Johnson's sister, manager. She's a producer of film, et cetera, to help us with the direction. My team, the A-list with You Must Be JD. We start making music, right? And everything just fell into place the way it's supposed to. So we have Ender Black music now. We released my new album through that venture. And, you know, I got so much love for James, man. He never stopped believing in me. You know what I mean? And how many people can say that someone believed in them through success and failure, and really more failures than success, right? In that 10-year period of time. Yeah. But he never gave up on me and he inspired me to never give up on myself. So it's cool. It's real dope to be here today, man.
Yeah, man, that's fire, man. Like, James is a dope individual, man. He done went through the peaks and valleys of life and got so much knowledge to pass on. He's been super inspirational to me too, man. Just watching him from afar, just watching what he's doing. And I had an opportunity to have some conversation with him and just pick out that game, man. And I just try to apply it. You know what I'm saying? Just keep pushing forward. Now,
yeah, man. His hashtag is stay the course, right?
Yeah.
And that for me, bro, has been so inspiring because I veer off the course sometimes. You know what I mean? Because life is what it is, and sometimes you have to make a decision to take care of yourself, take care of your family, or you're trying to chase a quick thing that might not be the right thing, right? There's a lot of different decisions that can veer you off course. But James has been really inspiring to me and a constant reminder of, like, just because you're going through some shit in a given time doesn't mean it's the end for you, right? As long as you stay the course and you refuse to give up, God has a plan for all of us. And James is just a dope guy, man. I'm glad to call him a brother and be working with him moving forward. And we always say we back for good this time, man. Nothing's going to stop us this go around.
Yeah. Super facts. That's facts all the way. Now, I want to pivot to the album now. Game 7. Yeah. You know, I listened to this project a few times. I feel this ain't no gas. I feel this album is Grammy nomination worthy.
Thank you, bro.
Yes, sir. It tells a story. It gives vital information and also is inspiring. And those type of things like that are key elements to me for that type of like Grammy nomination feel. Now, I wanted to ask you, like, what is the meaning? I understand it now by listening, but why title it Game 7 for the audience? And also, why is it not on the streaming services yet?
Yeah, two great questions, man. First, again, thank you, bro. I don't take that type of compliment lightly. That means a lot to me. So I appreciate that. Game seven is really the energy that we're approaching this movement with, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about this, it's a sports analogy, right? So I consider everything up to this point games in a series, right? And so some nights you come out, you have a good game, you win one. Some nights you come out, you have a bad game, you lose one. And then you make it to that game seven where the series is tied 3-3. At that point, it's really a gut check moment for you, right? Mm-hmm. At that point, all the excuses go out the window. At that point, you have no choice but to bet on yourself. You're going all in, right? The shots you would have taken, the shots you might not have taken in game one or two or three or four, you're going to have to take that shot in game seven, right? You're going to have to prove that you can make that shot in game seven. And, you know, it's either win or go home, right? And so JD, my producer, JD, not James DuBose, the two JDs involved here, JD and I, we sat down and we were talking about the feeling we wanted to have. And we were probably about five songs in. And I said, bro, it's either win or go home. Like it's game seven. Mm-hmm. And he texted me back. He said, that's it, bro. That's the title, right? Not only is that the title, that's how we're going to approach the rest of this movement, right? And so this is game seven, round one, right? Mm-hmm. We got round two coming right behind it. And we're going to continue to push it to that championship level, right? So consider this the first round of the NBA playoffs, right? And we refuse to lose this time around. And so that's what it's about, man. And it's really like I've been applying to my life lately. I've been thinking like tomorrow's not promised, right? Pretend this is the last game you ever going to play every single day. So why not show up as your best self, right? You know what I mean? And take those risks and bet on yourself. Absolutely. So that's what game seven is. The second part of your question is why isn't it on streaming yet? Mm-hmm. So I have like North Cat's a good example, bro. We have millions of streams on North Cat across multiple platforms, played at all kinds of stadiums. But when you're making a third of a penny per stream, right, it's very difficult to really feel successful, even though you're super popular.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I saw somebody else say that, like one of my worst nightmares is being famous and broke. Right. Like I think if you're famous and having all that attention on you, but you can't feed yourself or take care of your family, that's the worst, bro. Like that to me is the, and there's a lot of artists right now because of the way that the streaming system is structured that are mad famous and mad broke.
Yeah.
Right. And someone watching this might say, yeah, you don't make a lot on the streaming, but you can get paid to perform the song. And there are some artists who are equipped to do that, right? I consider myself one of them. You know, my live show is a strength of mine. I perform with a band that opens up doors for me, and we're able to generate some revenue that way. But for a lot of rappers, live shows that's not their thing, right? The kind of music they make is not conducive to that. And so I just think it's a really lopsided structure. Spotify is making billions of dollars, right? Apple Music, billions of dollars, right? Apple, in fact, is probably a $1 trillion company today, largely built on what they've done on the streaming music and film platform. And we believe that creators deserve better.
Yeah.
Simply put, right? You know, think about the pandemic for a second, bro. When everything was shut down, what was available to get you through the pandemic? Music, right? TV, film. Everybody was sitting on they couch streaming a movie on Netflix, right? Or listen to music to get yourself through. But artists always seem to be the ones at the bottom end of the pay scale. And I know that might be counterintuitive because you see the artists with the jewels and the cars and the chains, and that's an image that we present. But it's really a lopsided structure. So with Game 7, we decided, James and I talked, why don't we do something different, right?
Yep.
Is it more important to us to be popular, or is it more important to us to be successful, right? And those two things aren't always the same.
Right.
And so we found this Even platform called Even to release the music direct to consumers in a way that fairly compensates the artists who are putting the music out. And I think creates a more intimate connection between us and the audience. You know what I'm saying? And so while we may not be popular, right? This might not be accessible today to millions and millions of people, but the people who want the music can get the music.
Right.
And the people who want the music and want more music can be in direct contact with us. And we can continue to deliver product in that way. So far, it's been incredible. So I remember celebrating when North Cat hit 1 million streams. Right. It was a big deal for us. Mm-hmm. G, Kane, Arm & Hammer, we felt super successful. The Game 7 project has been out for 5 days. and we're at the equivalent of about 1 million streams so far, right? Mm-hmm. And in terms of revenue, right?
Right.
So that milestone with North Cap took us a lot longer and we got a lot less back. It's taken us 5 or 6 days with Game 7 with just a few people purchasing the project.
Right.
And that is not about like lining the pockets of our creatives. It's about giving us the chance to invest back. Now we can go and shoot the visuals. Now we can finish up the next project. Now we can do some live performances and really build this thing organically, which is a lesson I just learned throughout my journey. You know, chasing a record deal was like the whole thing for me when I was young. Not realizing I could have did this all along, because when I went independent, when me and my partner Rashad started to push our other project, we did really, really well. But there was always this thing in the back of my mind, like, damn, I'm not famous yet. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be famous. But what good is being famous if you can't really build a business model that works for yourself? So this Game 7 album is on even for that reason, right? It's the spirit of independence. It's direct to consumer, like the old mixtape days. You know what I mean? Like, I might have rolled up on you back in the day if you were at A&T when I was there. Like, hey, I got a mixtape, $5, right?
Right.
And yep. That's the model, right? And this gives us the chance. People can pay what they want for it too, right? So pay what you want model, right? We've had people pay $100 for the project, which is a big, when I see those transactions come through, I'm like, man, people really value the art. And that means a lot to me. But there are some people who can't pay $100 and they can give us $10 for the project, right? And we value both of them. It doesn't matter what you pay for it. We just want people to get the music. The response has been really great. And we're going to continue to figure out different ways to get it to people. Because I know you bought it on Even, so you know it's not, we got a learning curve there. People have to get accustomed to playing music in a different way.
Right.
So we will continue to be creative. And to anybody watching this who's like, man, I don't know about that Even thing, I'm going to go a different way. We encourage you to go. It's very easy. If you go to my Instagram, you can even see a tutorial on how to access it. But we will consider people in the future with some different ways to release it as well.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely encourage people to go rock with the project, man. A lot of times people be complaining about these playlists on Spotify as you're not getting the substance that you're seeking for. So if you're looking for something different, you got to go a different route to go get it. I went to this platform. I'm going to give you my testimony. I went there. I put in the email address. I made my purchase. And I got in return for that something even worth even more than the purchase, because you got a message. Also, it's got some things that's inspiring. You know, when I'm listening to the project, I'm like, yo, he's saying some things that hitting me. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, this is this resonates with my current trajectory. I got to stay a course, just like you was talking about, just like the message that he's putting in the music. So I definitely tell everyone, yo, go tune in. This is something that you wouldn't regret. And if you're looking for something different, do something different. And this is definitely the reason for you.
Amen, bro. Amen. I'm glad it resonated with you. And we all need inspirational music. Yeah. Sometimes you just want to go play something that's going to get you on the way to the club. And I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a time and a place for everything. And we feel like this fits in a very particular lane. And all the music I'm going to be doing is going to have that inspirational theme moving forward. Because you got a testimony, bro. I got a testimony. And right. When we find that synergy between each other's testimony, I think that's a staying power for an album. Hopefully you're going to go back to this album many different times throughout your life. And that's what we're trying to create. Something that lasts. You know what I mean? Something that's meaningful. Yeah.
And my wife heard me bumping it downstairs. She was like, who that? I told her who it was. She was like, I would listen to him, because she don't really listen to rap. She's like, I would listen to him. Let me hear this later. I'm like, all right, bet. So just tell you, it's for
everyone. Shout out to your wife, man. Yeah, shout out to your wife. That's right. I think it's gonna reach everybody, man. I was on so I mentioned that Dr. Celicia is a creative director for us and helping curate the movement. Her sister is Selena Johnson, who your audience probably knows as the voice on All Falls Down by Kanye and as a successful R&B singer. Songs like More Than I Am Your Woman, etc. Her audience is a little more mature than the audience that I have for my hip hop music, right?
Right.
Or that hip hop music typically has. Let me just say it that way. And we went live together a couple of nights ago, and her fans pop into the comments, right?
Mm.
And I'm playing records from my album, and that was kind of their sentiment. Like, I don't really rock with hip hop, but I love this. You know what I'm saying? So we reaching people outside of the genre and outside of the culture, but also for those of us who like the bars and like the true hip hop, we reaching those folks too. So, shout out to your wife. That's affirming for me, bro.
Yeah, appreciate that. Appreciate that, man. Now, we talking about bars. I got this segment of the show called Breakdown the Bars. So
yeah,
when I listened to your intro, you know what I'm saying, you came out swinging. And I'm going to talk about some bars, and I want you to break them down for us.
Okay.
So on the first one called Push, you said corporations came and gave the rap game weirdos. Never thought I'd see a day where the junkies are the heroes. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
Man, I meant a lot by that. you know what I've seen, man, is let me say it this way, bro. If you're walking down the street and there's a train wreck in front of you, it's almost impossible not to watch that train wreck, right? There's just something innately in human beings that draws us to a train wreck or a disaster, right? And when the internet became the way that we consume everything, the corporations realized that, hey, we don't even have to invest anymore in content that's uplifting, positive, and inspiring, because people gonna watch those train wrecks, right? And they've and that's the weirdos line, right? It's just people who have really just no substance at all about what they're doing, and they know that the worse the situation is, right? The worse they look, the worse they behave, the more views and clicks and likes they're going to get. And corporations don't really care about the future of our community. Mm-hmm. They like, shoot, if you can get 100 million streams from driving your car into a tree, keep on driving your car into a tree.
Right.
And it also might seem like it's benefiting the artists that are doing that, but they harming themselves. You know what I'm saying? They taking extra drugs just to look extra crazy, right? And impacting their health and the well-being of their families. Or they doing things that are way out of bounds with what they normally do. I saw an artist pretend to commit suicide as a part of their show, right? Climbed up above a thing, drops down. Yeah. And over time, man, the message that sends is just terrible. So that train wreck is that weirdos line, right? Corporations just investing in the worst of the worst. In the worst parts of our culture. And they don't really care about what that means for us as a people.
Subscribe now for part two.
The Highest Point Podcast.
More than a pod, it's a lifestyle.